Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Anatomy of Movie here at Popcorn Talk. We're talking Vista.
Vista.
No? Anybody? No?
Vista.
All right.
I got you.
I'm joking. For those of you who know the reference, this Terminator Genisys was filmed under the working title, or the production title Vista, so that way, you know, they people didn't know what was going on.
Right.
Which, of course, references Hasta la Vista.
Hasta la Vista.
The famous line said by Arnold Schwarzenegger. We have quite the panel today. We have, from our regular panels, Dimitri Panos.
Hello, movie fans.
We have Zach Wilson from AfterBuzz TV joining us.
Hey, guys.
And you might see his face a little bit more as well.
Yeah, I'll be around.
He wants to do some more anatomies. We welcome him. He's a great person. And I want to let... we have on Popcorn Talk, we have Action Movie Anatomy. And, you know, these guys are great. They kind of do what Anatomy of a Movie does, but specifically for action movies. And they have segments and what defines an action movie. And I really, if you haven't checked out the show, you should.
Yeah.
Although numbers indicate that you have. So
some people have watched us.
So, Andrew, introduce yourself, and then I'll introduce how you kind of got to the panel here
today.
For sure,
yeah. I'm Andrew Guy. I do... Action Movie Anatomy on Popcorn Talk, and I'm really excited to be here. I've watched a few episodes of your guys' show for prep and just out of sheer enjoyment. So, yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That's right. And what's fun is, you know, there's kind of a crossover in the sense of, you know, we're doing Terminator Genisys on Anatomy of a Movie, but these guys did Terminator 2 on Action Movie Anatomy. So, you know, if you want more Terminator stuff, check that out.
Yeah.
We've got your roster filled out.
My life has been filled with Terminator for the last about month. Just doing research and watching them all.
Just change your last name to Connor and move on.
Andrew Connor.
There you go. Ah, man. All right. So, overall impressions of this movie. Let's start there. Why don't we start with the newbies and with Zach. Go ahead.
You know, it was fun as long as you don't think about it too much. That was sort of my takeaway at the end of it.
Fair enough. Okay.
It was like, I left the theater, I'm like, yeah, that was fun. And then I started to think more about the story and more about what I'd watched. And it's like, oh, there's a lot of problems in there.
Yeah. Okay. Fair point. Yeah. Andrew?
I think my expectations were set so low for this movie based off of what I've heard and the critical reception. Even though it had a high score on IMDb, which is relatively surprising for this type of movie, especially for the fifth installment of the series... I enjoyed myself. I actually had a really good time. It was one of the first times I went to a movie by myself, and I just found myself just like kicking back, eating popcorn, just enjoying this movie. And I went back and watched Terminator 1 afterwards, and I think a lot of the references and the callbacks were really enjoyable. And you know, Mr. Cameron himself said that he considers this the third installment of the series. So if he's got a nod towards it, you know, it's got my vote as well.
Yeah. So before I get into that, I have to digress for 1 minute. Please allow me. This past week or so, I started getting congratulations on my LinkedIn thing. People are just saying, hey, congratulations. Hey, congratulations. And I was like going, what the hell did I do? I had no idea. So when I looked it up, it was, hey, it's 2 years that I've been on board with Anatomy of a Movie.
Oh, wow.
So I just wanted to not only thank the people who watch, listen, and whatever. Phil, great thanks to you, to the hosts of Anatomy of a Movie, to Kevin, of course, and Maria, and of course, Ian. Thank you. Thank you for putting up with me. I appreciate it.
I can attest to the fact that every time Dimitri leaves the studio, he says, I'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been fantastic. So, and thanks to those people who've congratulated me for being here for 2 years. So that's great.
Well, congratulations, man.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. It's been, like I said, it's been a privilege and an honor to be behind this microphone and do this. So, So regarding Terminator Genisys, look, I think, first off, I enjoyed this movie. I had a good time. There's a key word, I think, for you to, like, if you're going to somewhat even acknowledge and like this movie, that key word is acceptance. Mm-hmm. You have to accept a lot. In all my research in doing this movie, one thing that nobody has said at all in comparisons to, like, yeah, there's been the comparisons to the other Terminators and all this stuff, but nobody has said, like, they took a page from the 2009 J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they did. In that movie, there was a nexus point in time in which they, you know, J.J. Abrams and the writers, they diverged from the timeline that all the Star Trek fans are greatly beholden to, and they went off and they went on a different string, a different parallel of time, so that they can create their own sandbox in which to play in, do whatever they want with various characters and whatnot. And if you are a fan of Star Trek, if you are okay with the fact that they obliterated Vulcan, then, you know, you're golden. You're fine. Now, as a Star Trek fan, a lot of stuff had to seep in a lot with me. Same thing with Terminator Genisys. But once, like I said, okay, this is just like they're doing what they did in Star Trek. I have to accept that. I have to accept certain things that this is not a story of John Connor becoming the hero and saving John Connor. They're going on a line where John Connor is the villain.
Yeah.
So this isn't about the love story. Like, this isn't about them, Sarah and Kyle Reese, like, copulating. And it becomes a non-issue. It becomes a non-factor. You gotta accept that. Because I've read reviews that have said, well, you can't do this with Kyle Reese. He doesn't even sleep with that. I go, who cares at this point? They've created their own universe and timeline in which they can do various different things, which I can't wait to dive into, because my research when I was going into this is, number one, certain things made my hair hurt. It's like you were saying at the top of the thing. You got it. It's like there was so much exposition. And I think a main difference, Star Trek was able to explain it away relatively easy for the layman to get. Mm-hmm. This movie...
Yeah.
It was hard. Like, even all the exposition was... Well, it came from the Terminator. He wasn't the best or the Guardian. It wasn't written in an easy way. Pops.
I like calling him Pops.
Yeah, I do too. That was great. Yeah.
I think the issue is that Star Trek had a basic... In the main storyline, in the original series, it's just one timeline. There's like a little bit of time travel. You go talk about the whales for a little bit. But overall, you're not dealing with time travel. So when you do one comeback and then you change everything from there, that's easy to understand. With Terminator, you're already dealing with... You go to the future and then you come back and then you affect the future, so you have to send somebody else back. And there's all this sort of convoluted stuff to begin with. So to add this new, like... sort of multiverse layer to it with the Matt Smith Skynet or Genisys or whatever you want to call him, for him to come back. And then when I first saw it, I didn't even connect right away the fact that this was a different universe, that's what they were doing, that it was like Star Trek. It took me a little while. They weren't as clear as Star Trek was.
And I think that is, I think that's an issue storytelling-wise, because there was a shitload of exposition in this movie. But at times, look, when you have exposition, in Star Trek, Spock would do the exposition, right? And then you'd have somebody like Bones going, an Englishman, like, what are you? And then he would say, okay, this is how it's done. In this movie, it was Kyle Reese saying, can we turn him off? That was a mistake to me, because you don't want to turn him off. You just want him to say, look, dude, I'm just a human. Like, put it out in layman terms for me to understand, and then maybe do it in such a way in which it's easy to do. Because you're right. When you're doing a ton of multiverse stuff, it can get so heady. Like I said, it made my hair hurt. But I accepted the fact that we're going on a completely different timeline. So I look forward into talking about that. I had to go to, like, the source. I looked up every article that I could find on the screenwriters, and then I wanted to see about Alan Taylor. I wasn't so much, like, usually I'll talk about special effects and set pieces, which are, I thought they were a lot of fun. The helicopter scene, as cartoony as it was a blast to watch. They had good action pieces in this movie. And I have to say, far better than Salvation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and Salvation had the biggest plot hole ever. They could have just killed Kyle Reese and we're done. We're done with everything. And they captured him. But this movie, like, I applaud them for at least trying. You know, they left a lot of unanswered questions, but we'll get into that later. Answer.
Well, what did you think? Despite how convoluted the movie was in the beginning, you still, I feel like, I mean, I did, about 30 minutes in, I was like, oh, I get it. I've got it. Like, everything clicked. Everything made sense. So, like, even though the storytelling may have lacked in the beginning, I still felt like them being able to tie it all together. It was roughly around the time, I think, when Jai Courtney and Emilia Clarke went into 2017. It was, like, right around then. I was like, okay, I've got it all figured out. Everything makes sense now. Even though the beginning kind of was lacking in, like, the structure of storytelling, I still got there.
Yeah.
And I had a good, like, oh, okay, this is great. And I'm on board now.
You're on board.
Yes.
And again, it just goes back to its acceptance. Because I've read reviews of this movie where people had not accepted. And I'm like going, well, then you didn't get the point. So to kind of, like, they don't need to attack Kyle Reese anymore. They've effectively made him a non-issue in a sense. Mm-hmm. They don't have to have sex in this movie. They don't have to get together because that's a non-issue now that we know that John Connor has been compromised.
Yeah.
So what were your thoughts on the movie?
What I will give this entire franchise a lot of credit. Right. If you go back to the original Terminator. It's an overall simplistic idea, right? In the sense that the Terminator comes back, and I mean, there's so much future stuff that obviously all the rest of the franchise starts to dive into. But in terms of what that movie was, it was a simple plot. It was a chase movie,
uh-huh. And it was a looped, a closed looped time travel movie.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a time travel movie with like a little love story built in,
a bit of horror.
Yeah,
it was great. Yeah.
You know, but it did it in the right way where that movie was just so good and then just sparked everyone's interest of, okay, well, what is Skynet? What is this? Can we dive in? And, you know, then we kind of went, you know, with Terminator 2 and, you know, whatever you think of the rest of the movies. But at least the thirst was there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I will give those, you know, the first movie in particular, a lot of credit for having set that up. And then what's fun is we'll certainly talk about all the various Easter eggs, the nostalgia there, and especially in the first kind of opening of like, is this the same movie as Terminator? Oh,
right.
Yes, it is, but because we're going to tell you that it's actually not.
Right.
And I like that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. For me, whenever you get into time travel, I just, you know, I check a box and I'm like, okay, you know what? What's the rest of the story about? Because this time travel is not going to make any sense.
Right.
It's just not, you know, has anyone time traveled that can actually explain time travel? So it's all just theory. So it doesn't matter.
I have. Disprove me. That's what I'm going to say.
Oh, that sounds like a fun conversation.
So. Been there, done that.
Well, there you go.
I mean, time travel is something where it only becomes an issue if you don't explain the rules clearly. And I think that's the issue here is that we don't know what... Halfway through this movie, they changed the rules as we've understood them from this franchise. And so we're left, like, trying to pick up the pieces.
Well, and let's be honest, you're right. And I agree with you 100%. The other thing, though, is that they're all like... 7 timelines we have to be aware of. And Alan Taylor, I don't know if we want to get into this right now.
Let's start there only because normally we start with everything else.
Yeah.
But in order for anything else to make sense, I feel like we just have to get this out of the way.
Right.
And you're right. Time travel is a staple in science fiction. It always has been. And Star Trek, through all its iterations, has had multiple universes, multiple time travel. You know, we want to talk cinematically. I think one of the best explanations and sometimes an underappreciated movie comes in one of the most excellent trilogies ever is the Back to the Future trilogy.
Yeah.
And Back to the Future 2... They, you know, again, it goes to Doc Brown was explaining time travel to Marty, and Marty's like, English, Doc. And he pulls out a chalkboard and he starts he starts graphing out. He starts drawing out. This is the timeline. This is how Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale made an audience understand. And to this day, I still think that that explanation, even those for the uninitiated, that makes sense. And you can pretty much apply it to, because everybody else has applied that theory, that explanation, in pretty much every movie, including this one. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Back to the Future 2 was an inspiration
Absolutely.
For this movie.
Yeah, the writers.
You know, when, you know, it's when Biff, it's not so a wonderful life, and we go back to Hill Valley, and it's Biff Town. Mm-hmm. So, and that's where they wanted to start. So the timelines, though, in this movie, there were seven, and Alan Taylor had a Doc Brown board. So let's start off. Here's his explanation. We start in 2029 during the Future War, then go back to 1984.
Jonathan, I'm going to task you of finding some sort of graphic for this.
Oh, I have it. I have it. I have a graph.
Can you send it to him? Because yes. I feel like for the ones watching, or at least if you're listening, we'll also include the link.
I have a whole like graph, but it's so with post-it notes. It's insane. But okay,
it's like one of those serial killer walls in his house with post-it notes and arrows.
It's like string. So we got 2029. Then we jump back to 1984. Jumping into 2017. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's three right there. But when we start the movie, we're actually pre-Judgment Day, because we're watching a happy, beautiful world that was lost. And then Judgment Day happens. Then we cut ahead to post-Judgment Day. So that's actually two more time frames within the prologue, which brings us up to five. Then, when we time travel with Kyle, he's remembering an alternate timeline, which was his 13th birthday in the Happy Time verse, which would be 2012, seen in two different ways. And the seventh is when we flash back to 1970s, when Sarah is saved by the Guardian.
Right.
And that's my favorite, because that's my 11-year-old daughter is playing the Sarah Connor. So this is Alan Taylor. This is what he had to contend with. So for a director, and then your writers, and then an editor who has to like try to figure this out, that's seven. And then for an audience, like, again, if you're not accepting of any of this, and there's a graphic up there.
Holy moly.
You found it. Right. What?
I bet this is, by the way, this is probably like the simplest version of the graphic.
Right. And you still have to have a degree in astrophysicism.
Einstein couldn't figure this out.
I mean, well, here's the thing. By the end of it, like where we established, because for the Matt Smith Skynet, mm-hmm. that character, like that event could only happen in a separate timeline from the original Terminator movie. Because right. otherwise, there's no time for them to send the bots back for the Terminator 2.
Right.
So, or it doesn't work. So it has to be a separate universe. So is this all in... Is every time travel event creating a completely alternate universe, not like Back to the Future where right. it's an alternative timeline
right.
within the same universe
right.
it's a completely separate universe, so there's like there's a timeline out there where they just like it terminated the beginning of Terminator right. 1 just it just kept going and they don't have anything to
I'm
going to
use another example and this one I just thought about. Think of the movie War Games. Okay, at the end of War Games, okay, our Whopper computer is mapping out all the various ways in which the Earth can be destroyed via nuclear war. So if you think of those in a sense as like timelines, it's almost like Skynet. Skynet has pretty much mapped out every possibility to try, like, everything that they've attempted to wipe out humans. They've they mapped it out. And basically they said, we can't defeat the humans. They came to a conclusion that's like, it's not going to happen. We've done all the simulations. We've done everything. We can't do it. So basically, who really is the nexus point? We've got to take out the person who's doing this, and we have to compromise him, and that's John Connor.
If you can't beat him, join him.
Right. If you can't beat him, join him. Sarah Connor, doesn't matter. Kyle Reese, Doesn't matter. We have to compromise the one nexus point, who's John Connor. So, you know, in Skynet, this is the... Now, this could have been explained more. It was Matt Smith. I mean, agree or disagree. I think, again, research, he was Skynet. It wasn't Genesis, but he was the embodiment of Skynet. And he has a very telling piece of dialogue where he says, I have come a very long way to stop you. Mm-hmm. Okay? Meaning... he's from somewhere.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's mapped this out. So he's either far in the future, from the past, whatever. There wasn't enough said about that character. And for Doctor Who fans like myself, I was like going, oh, there he is, this Matt Smith. And I didn't know his, I didn't know what his role was going to be until he started sneaking up and was like, oh, this isn't good. Yeah. This isn't good. And then when he says, I've come a very long way to stop you, you're like, wait, what, huh? And then... we go into our tangent timeline.
Yeah. So in theory, it could be that that Skynet traveled from that's from an alternate dimension.
Right.
And this is all within our original universe. It's just his inclusion just shot it all to.
Right. And it's not from the original two movies. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a different embodiment of Skynet at this point that is just fed up with the human race, and they're like, we can't do this, so we got to do something else.
Yeah, well, like Matt Smith's involvement, just everything is wibbly wobbly.
Right, timey-wimey.
Like, just don't worry about it. Get him back in there and then
it's
move
great.
Forward.
Yep, absolutely.
Let me ask you guys, well, first I do have a confession. Up until like pretty much this Terminator, I've never seen any of the Terminators, so it's all fairly recent
really?
To me. So as such, because we're, now everything's just like, what?
Now it's all clear.
Yes, it is.
No, it must be even more confusing in your head, I think.
Was it answered in this movie that the Guardian was programmed by John Connor? Or
no.
is that an assumption that we all made, or at least I made?
That...
it's not.
It's never explained because it never comes into play.
But is that a fact that I read somewhere? Is that a theory?
Wait, in this movie?
In this movie.
No. I mean, in fact, that's Alan Taylor came out and said, there are unanswered questions.
Yes.
I know going in. And here they are. Taylor starts to... that's, yes, the looming questions are... who sends Pops back? Because we never know. We never know
why
he's back.
You're talking back to the 70s, right?
Yeah, who sends Pops back to the 70s? Because, again, her grandparents, there's an explosion at a house.
Right.
So was there another Terminator being sent back to kill her grandparents or parents at the lake house, which is established in the first movie? Because they do kill, in the first Terminator... there's a scene where the Terminator is at that lake house, I believe, and the Terminator picks it up and does Sarah Connor's mother's voice
right.
to try to get her to go up there. So where did Skynet get it together to attack John Connor? That's another question that we don't know. And how did that happen? And there are answers to these things that are not provided in this movie instantly.
Well, maybe it's, you know, the reason why I bring that up is because... in terms of the Guardian going back there, you know, it was programmed. Now I don't know. I think the way it was that I've seen, John Connor programmed the Guardian because he knew that in order for his survival in whatever timeline there is, he still needs to be born. So although they don't mate in this one, he needs to be born somehow, and so that ensures that Sarah Connor and Kyle Reese create John Connor, but then he can become his evil self.
Right? Yeah, but now, by the end of it, that can't
happen.
It can't work that way because they're too far in the future to create John Connor in time. I guess you could send one combination of either them or the baby back again in order for him to grow up at the appropriate moment.
But is it the Terminator... is it Judgment... is it Terminator 2 Judgment Day-ish? Because... correct me if I'm wrong, like, Amelia Clark and Sarah Connor says, I was at the lake house, I was on the dock, I looked up and I saw my parents or my mother in the window, then there was the explosion. So what I gathered is, cabin's blown up with their parents, but then, so somebody came back to either destroy the parents, and somebody sent the Guardian back, Could it be? I mean, for the sake of this conversation, if we were to say that it was John Connor, it was sort of kind of a John Connor Terminator 2 Judgment Day, except he went back to the 70s.
Right. It's like Terminator 2 set 20 years prior.
Exactly. Right. And now we have Pops, who is her father figure.
Which totally negates the first and second movie when she sees him again.
In a sense, yes.
Yeah. But it's also an alternate timeline.
Right. It's a different timeline.
Basically, for those of you watching, I can't understand why you wouldn't be able to follow this.
Well, we're trying to map it out. And I think that we're covering, you know, I think what's going to be great about this show is covering this stuff, and that at the end, maybe we become a little more educated. Phil, now, did you catch up with the movies after?
I did.
Okay. So
I haven't seen The Salvation. I've seen one and two.
You don't need three and four.
Yeah,
so I've seen one and two. And this one.
And three, I thought, was an interesting, entertaining movie.
Yeah.
You know, sort of a downer, the way that it ends. And I give him props for that. But, you know, and going back to what you were saying, too, about James Cameron saying, this is my third, you know, this is what I consider to be in my timeline kind of thing, which was very interesting. And you know, it was, I remember tweeting that out going, hey, if Cameron's on board, exactly. I'm in. I'm going to go, you know, and
because he's very openly discusses how he does not like the third and fourth movie at all.
Right.
He wishes they didn't happen.
Yeah.
Well, so now they've kind intense. Of been negated.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Essentially.
Yeah. I think basically the end of the day is they were trying to do for Terminator what J.J. Abrams did for Star Trek, in that they could just start over at square one with this movie and then do whatever story they wanted for this new trilogy that they wanted to do.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Courtney called it a reset.
Yeah.
It's not a reinstallment. It's not
and
a recreation, anything.
Yeah. It wasn't as clean as Star Trek, but if you just accept in your head, this is all new. Don't think about 1 and 2. They're done with, just like the original series was done with by the start of that movie, Star Trek. Then you can go forward in this
and
watch it.
And it comes down to acceptance or non-acceptance.
Yeah.
So, like, again, you know, I was surprised that there was no throwback or recall to, this is exactly what Star Trek did. Exactly. They just didn't... They made it simpler, and they didn't deal with seven timelines. They just dealt with the one, but there were big issues that happen in that movie that, as a diehard beholden Star Trek fan, you either on board with or you're not. And if you're not on board with it, you're not going to buy into the time travel thing. And I feel the same thing on Terminator Genesis a lot.
Phil, did you see this before you saw 1 and 2?
No, and that's what I wanted to ask you guys is, because I did see 1 and 2 before I saw this, and therefore, you know, I know you in particular, Andrew, want to talk about the nostalgia factor of it. You know, because I've seen those movies so close, I was like, oh wow, this is great.
Right.
But I you know, I really would think that someone who hasn't seen those movies is gonna have a really tough time with this.
I would love to talk to someone that has not seen any of the other Terminators and then saw this, because the first half an hour of this, there is so much of a narrative that it's kind of like you don't really need to see the other movies at all to understand what's going on in here. But then at the same time, there's, as you can tell by our discussion, there is so much to talk about. Have you seen the other four movies? Mainly the first two.
Yeah.
So I would love to talk to someone that hasn't seen any of them and just saw this, and like where their mind's at, what they think about it.
You know, we are live. Is there anybody who's watching us now that has never seen any of their or Terminator and Terminator Judgment Day? Let us know. I have a feeling though that most of the people who went in have some semblance.
Right.
But you're right. Like, this movie would not really make sense. And in a, you know, when you say that too, it's a flaw. It's a flaw in the writing, because you need to make a movie like Star Trek.
Star Trek, the
you
new
need
Mad
to
Max.
Make it,
like,
right.
You can still enjoy that.
You need to make it for all audiences. And I think what this script could have used maybe was a step back. I think the screenwriters, Leda Kalogridis, which that's, you know, she's so Irish.
And Patrick
I'm
Lussier.
Kidding. It's going to be Greek. And Patrick Lussier, who's a fanboy. And, mm-hmm. and you know, it's they were so close in love with their subject matter that sometimes you need to step back. Maybe show it to somebody else to rein it in. It just seemed like this could have maybe been a little bit more explainable. As a fan, I was on board, but I could see people getting confused.
I can see that too. I mean, you know, if whether right now live or in the future, you guys write your comments. Let us know if you haven't seen it. But you know, let's talk about the Easter eggs, because you know, if you are a fan, that really is a big selling point. And you know, Andrew, you were drawn to the nostalgia of it, right?
Well, yeah.
So explain why, and then we'll get into the specifics.
So I had seen Terminator 1 in over a decade, probably. I watched T2 recently a couple times, and then I saw this movie, and then literally as soon as I left the theater, I went home and I watched the first movie. And the shot-for-shot remake, or the recreation of the first 20 minutes of T1, or that scene of the Terminator's landing, is perfect. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. Almost back to the... I mean, you got the same... dump truck driver. Well, it looks like him.
That's what I want to know. Right. I was like going, because I watched Terminator before watching this, and seeing that shot, I was like going,
"That's the same guy."
That how the hell did they do that?
Yeah.
Because that guy's 20, 30 years old.
Well, I tried to look up the cast truck. List. Did you look up the cast list? It wasn't him.
Here's how, you know, at least for Arnold, they did like a big search, right? And they eventually found this guy.
Brett Azar, I believe, or something like that.
Yeah, some a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Who they were just like, we need somebody who has absurd muscles like Arnold did back in 1984.
Yeah, and, you know, he won this, and so... Yeah, there he is, and I thought, like, did they kind of do some CGI? Did they do some film restoration and kind of put those little parts in and whatever else? And no, they had him, and
they just CG'd his face in post pro.
Yeah.
Which looked awesome. It did, because when you first watch it, you're like, okay, this whole thing is CG, right? And then you go back and you're like, oh no, that's a real guy. Yeah. They just use the same lighting filters, the grays, the blues, to make it look like the classic 84 film. Like, that's another thing that that brings up nostalgia when you watch it, is they use the same like lighting and filters to make you feel like this movie is 30 years old.
Yeah, and I call it the James Cameron blue. If watch James
Abyss.
Cameron movies, whether it's The Abyss or Aliens or Judgment Day, Avatar, you know, there is
there
the
blue
James
in that movie?
Cameron. I think so. Yeah. you know, and but you're right. It was the it was the meticulous detail that Alan Taylor and his crew did. I mean, the dump truck scene was just like down to the millimeter way in which the camera moved.
Exactly. Everything.
And every spike of lightning and
the lines.
The lines, it was crazy. You know, the one thing that was a little bit disconcerting for me, maybe I was the only one, you know, when he comes up, when the Terminator comes across the punks, you know.
Right.
Bill Paxton was evidently, you know.
He was unable to do it.
He wasn't there.
Right.
So, you know, but still, it's like, it just the way that it played out. And then once Pops comes into the picture, you're like, okay, all bets are off. This is cool.
We're in a different movie now.
Yes,
that's what Cameron talked about. He's like, this movie paid so much respect to the first two films with the T-1000 and the Terminators coming as they did in Terminator 1. And then it gets to that point to where he's like, you know, give me your clothes. And then you're like, twist, like it's just like a curve right there. You're like, we're in a different movie now. He's like, I've been waiting for you, which is probably my favorite line of the movie.
Great.
I don't know why, I just loved it.
It was great.
And you're like, wow, okay, so this isn't the same movie, because for the longest time I was like, are they redoing Terminator? Is that what they're doing? Is this a complete reboot? Because I hadn't read a lot about it.
They shortened the shots, right? You know, whereas in the original, the scenes played out obviously a lot longer. This was just kind of like snippets. I was like, oh, are we just kind of hitting these points because we need to, and that's how we'll kind of move. And some of it I was reminded of when Kyle Reese is talking with the cop, you know, what year is it? What, you know,
right,
and I was like, are they just doing this because it's the world's cheesiest lines? And then, you know, when the cop answers him and he's not an actual cop, I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, I love the first Terminator, but like the 80s were cheesy.
Oh,
can
totally.
Can I just say, well, I still give credit to Cameron. But the other thing is, I like Jai Courtney in this movie, you know, and I really liked him as the villain in Reacher. We won't even talk about that whatever it was of a tried to be a diehard movie, but he is not Michael Biehn. Like, Michael Biehn can whine and shout out a line like when he's, what year is this? And, you know, Jai Courtney is a little bit, well, he was a little bit more buff.
He's more stoic.
He's
more
a little
buff.
Bit more stoic.
Absolutely.
And he's definitely the character that I think that we're going to try to see the audience sees like, is following because he's the one that's just as confused as everybody else. Like, wait a minute. I had to save you. Why are you saving me?
Right.
But even down to the department store thing, they even had, like, where he takes the shoes off the
thing. They halted production at Nike for that. They, like, right. were in a big debate. They're like, we need these shoes.
Need the Nikes.
We have to. So they shut down manufacturing and made 25 pairs just for this movie.
Yeah.
Which is just
which
awesome.
I think is hysterical. But they really got it down. And again, once the truck comes through the door again, we're right. in a different movie.
You know, and that's one thing I wrote down when I was watching the movie is, like, it's so cool to watch a younger Emilia Clarke. I'm saying her name right, right?
Yes.
Yeah. A younger Emilia Clarke play this more mature Linda Hamilton, this more mature Sarah Connor. Then when you go back and you watch 84, Linda Hamilton, who's clearly older, is playing this young girl, this young waitress that doesn't know what's going on. Right. She needs to be saved. They flipped it on a dime, which is so cool because it's like, you know, he's going back there to teach her everything and to help her. And you get there and she's like, nah, dude, I've already got this figured out. So it's cool to watch that, like, reversal roles and reverse of age, like, on
in
screen.
The spirit of which this is intended, if she's ever listening, I did not realize she was 28 years old.
Same
she
here.
Looked like she was like 14.
Yeah. I agree. I was so shocked that she's, like, close to 30. Yeah. And but you know what?
Because I thought, you know, I'm glad that they didn't actually have sex because as right. I was watching, I was like this is going to be statutory
this
rape.
Is wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, she looks young, but I will say this for Emilia Clarke. She, you know, there's a lot riding on this and, like, believability. Linda Hamilton really, you know, it, as James Cameron, really brings women of power into prominence. And he gives them great, powerful roles. And Linda Hamilton is pretty, you know, that's a hard act to follow.
Oh, dude,
and I think that
Lena
Headey did a fantastic job. Cersei Lannister did a fantastic job in the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which I think was an amazing show and should have been given a second season. But coming up to Emilia Clarke, you have to have an actress that can handle action. They have to be strong. And in Game of Thrones, she's not action-y. She's very dialogue-ish, but we don't see her wielding a sword. So it's like, how is she going to look with a gun? How is she going to pull that off? And I props to her. I thought she did a great job. I thought she was excellent. I liked watching her in this movie. The Khaleesi was great. She kicked ass.
I think, in terms of, I forget his actual name, or I know his actual name, I just don't know how to actually say it. Kyle Reese, right?
Jai Courtney.
Because I've seen the Divergent series,
right.
To me, I mean, it's kind of funny where it's similar to his Divergent series character, and then it's also not. It can take me out at moments, unfortunately, because, you know, his character in that movie is kind of a...
He's the guy you love to hate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's kind of got that snarky attitude in this movie, you know, especially towards Pop. So it worked the times it didn't, but overall, I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, I like that he gets put in his place a couple times, which is really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I liked stuff that happened sort of around him. To me, he was a little bit flat.
Mm-hmm.
He just did, there wasn't, I didn't feel any big emotions come from him, like nothing to really endear me to this character. Like I was on his side because of the character Kyle Reese
right.
and like
I agree.
The past I'm bringing to that character.
Right.
But he didn't do anything to really elevate or change or make the character his own. Whereas Emilia Clarke really did. Like I was engaged when she was on screen, and not just because she's fun to look at. Like she's playing a powerful
she's
woman,
14,
and she does
Zach.
It. You don't just say that. Nah, she's 28.
She's 29, actually. But I agree.
Yeah, you know, I really like the intro of Kyle Reese. I thought that was cool because you never really get his backstory, or at least you never see his backstory.
Right.
But I did have a problem with him and Jason Clark's interaction in the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. In the hallway, it just was like, it felt like classic 90s, like, hey, how's it going, Roger? Oh, it's good. Remember when we used to fly missions together? Like, if it was just, like, hollow, like, we are characters that have a relationship and we care about each other. It just felt flat to me.
Sounds like you just quoted Hot Shots.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I agree. You know, to an extent, I agree. But I think part of it is Michael Biehn, but he sort of owns that character.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's tough. And it's of no fault of Jai Courtney. I mean, again, you're stepping into big shoes, or Nikes, so to speak.
Exactly.
And it's tough to do. And I think he was told, or maybe it was a conscious decision on his part, to play it differently.
Right.
He, you know, because, you know, you've got great in Terminator, it's like, he can't be bargained with. Every single thing that Michael Biehn does, it's like with an exclamation point about the importance and the severity of the situation that they're in.
I mean, that was the thing about Michael Biehn that was so great, is that he's kind of the everyman. Like, you believe him. When you look at Jai Courtney, he kind of comes off as more of like a superhero Kyle Reese.
And he was buffer.
He was massive.
I think, too, you know, the big thing that obviously these guys have to play, they held it over Kyle Reese of like, okay, that they eventually, Sarah Connor and him have to mate.
Right.
And that was a big, and that was kind of continued, and we didn't really, until, let's say, you know, 4/5 into the movie, really kind of reveal that, oh, wow, I have to sleep with you? Why didn't you tell me this? And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a fan, you obviously know that that's supposed to happen. And also, because he has the photo, he has feelings towards her that you feel like he would have expressed earlier.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the reason why I think, character-wise, we're not buying into him.
That's one thing that... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Well, I just think that when we see him, like, dealing with the fact that, like, finding out, like, that he's John Connor's father, and that, like, him and Sarah, like, get to, like, in theory, within the timeline, get together at some point... His reaction is more towards, like, we only see it towards John at all. And it's more just shock. At no point do we really see him... I guess I didn't really feel a connection between Kyle and Sarah. I felt it the other way. When she sees him and it all starts to reveal that, like, they're going to fall in love and all that, you can see on Emilia Clarke's face how much that... pains her,
right?
Like, how much it hurts. And maybe it's just that I don't want to put it all on Jai, like, to say that it's his fault. I think it's partially in the script, partially in the direction. Just like, he didn't have as much to work with as she did. She had the stuff with Pops and, like, how do you're losing your father figure even though he's a robot, and dealing, and like, just the all of this happening at once. And she played it beautifully.
I agree. And there's one other thing that we haven't quite mentioned yet. I mean, the Kyle Reese character was brought up to fall in love with Sarah Connor before he even went back to 1984.
He
was in love with her, like, in a sense, already, in her spirit and such. What this movie, at least the way I sort of kind of wrap my head around it, is at this point, it's about, again, it's the falling back in love, again, because his world has been completely twisted. She knows everything. He doesn't quite, you know, he knows that he loves her, but doesn't realize the importance back in the first movie. But now all bets are sort of kind of off. They can have a brand new relationship, and who knows if they get together, what that offspring... It doesn't have to be John Connor.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. They could have a daughter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
They could hook up a month later, and then it'd be a totally different person.
Exactly. And in a sense, I give them kudos, because this is pretty bold for us Terminator fans and what we're beholden to throughout this entire thing about John Connor. Everything hinges on John Connor being the savior. But if John Connor's not the savior... and he's something else entirely different, they're able to... It's a brand new sandbox with new toys.
You know, well, I found that the same... What you were saying about it being unbelievable, their relationship, is because in the first movie, there's that monologue that he gives. He's, you know, I've known you. I've always loved you, Sarah. And it's so heavy-handed, but it's so believable. It's like a great love story. Whereas in this one, it's like, you know, he says, he's like, I feel like I've known you my whole life. They kind of like flirt, like skirt around the issue. They beat around the bush. It's not until like, what, 3/4 of the way through the movie he actually says that he loves her.
Right.
Whereas in the first one, it's like these characters are so believable because he came here in love with you. It's very different than it's portrayed in this movie, where it's like he came here with like a respect for you, or like he knows you. It's not the same type of thing with Michael Biehn, where it was like, I love you. I've always loved you, and this is why, this is X, Y, and Z. This is why our relationship is this way.
Do you think there's any of? Do you think the fact that he finds out that like John has really manipulated the situation, and add on to the fact that maybe not before, but now John is evil? Right. Do you think that affected how he feels about Sarah? Because like, when you find out that like you were effectively raised to fall in love with this person, that your emotions, your whole life has been manipulated to fall for this person. Right. I feel like you just instinctually take a step back and you're like, I don't know how I feel about that yet.
Right. But he doesn't know that until so far into the movie, which is why at the beginning their relationship is hard for me to believe, is because I don't get that conviction, that love that
yeah, he needs to display it more outwardly, and obviously it wouldn't have quite made sense, you know, if they really, again, if they just embraced and they had, like, again, even just a kiss, then you could buy it a little bit more at that point in time, because it's like, wait, what?
Right.
You know, because then they've displayed love rather than just talking about it.
And then when they find out John Connor's evil, and he finds out that he's the dad and all that, then you would kind of get that heartbreak. That heartbreak from him would be believable for him to pull away.
One key person that we really haven't talked about in this whole romance is Sarah Connor. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to think about it. In the original Terminator, okay, Kyle Reese comes in holding all the cards. He knows to a certain extent that he's already loved her because he's known her for so many years. Sarah Connor at that point has no idea who Kyle Reese is, has no idea that she's even going to fall for the guy at that point. Where now in this movie, where it turns, you know, it does a complete 180. We have Sarah Connor back in the 70s being told by Pops the Guardian everything down the line. So in a sense, she's, you know, you get a look, and this is, again, I think where Emilia Clarke, like, played this great. In a sense, she's like going, well, what the hell am I doing? Like, everything's mapped out for me.
Right, you get that
so
angst.
So, when this guy's supposed to come in, I'm supposed to fall in love with this guy now? She goes, what the hell? Like, there's nothing natural about this relationship, in a sense.
And especially when Pop's telling her, like, she's basically just a lying fish, like, okay, have at it.
You made it yet. Yeah.
Right. And she's like, well, no, you can't do that. Like, that's not the way it's supposed to be. So it changes everything for Sarah Connor. And I think Emilia Clarke, you're able to get that. Like, she's like, you know, it seems like my whole life has been mapped out and I've had no say in this.
Right.
I'm going to have a say in this now. And so, you know, you're going to have to earn my respect. If we're supposed to be together, great, you know, but you're going to have to earn my love and respect. Just because you walk through the door, I'm not going to go head over heels for you. It would have been really funny, though, had she said something, pictured you to be a little bit taller.
Right.
Like that might have been a little funny, but there's so much stuff.
Yeah. I want to touch upon J.K. Simmons, because out of all the characters, I felt he was the most unnecessary. He was funny because J.K. Simmons, but what are you doing in this movie?
Have you seen Whiplash? Here I am. You know, like that type of thing. Like, he just got the role. It's kind of like Bryan Cranston in Godzilla. You know, it's like after a huge accomplishment, it's like, throw him in this movie as this guy.
But at least, like, Bryan Cranston, like, I mean, he was the movie. He was Godzilla for the first 20 to 30 minutes. Whereas, he's just the guy whose pants were stolen now. I'm sorry.
He's the cop.
And it's like, what?
I thought he was going to play the psychologist. To me, he had more physical resemblance to the psychologist in Terminator Judgment Day. And I thought maybe, like, I remember you. Like, what's going on here?
I liked him when he showed up. I was expecting him to be, just by nature of him being J.K. Simmons, I expect him to be way more crucial to the plot line. Like, I was waiting for him to do something. Like, I thought, like, when they're getting in the helicopter, I was like, oh, he's going to go with them. And he's going to be, like, part of this ridiculous little team.
Yeah.
And then he just stays behind and gets shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could have just not been in the movie.
But there was a funny line where, you know, and again, how many eyes does an audience have to see through? But he was one of those characters where he's like, what is going on here? And I forget whether it was Kyle Reese or Sarah Connor says, we're saving the world. And he goes, okay, I can accept that.
Sarah Connor. Give me one reason why I should let you go
Save the world.
Yeah.
Well, I can accept that. And again, it just goes back to, you accept or you don't accept.
Yeah.
But I wish he figured it into the movie a little bit more. You know, it was a nice throwback to say, hey, I was that cop that you saved.
Right.
And I knew something was wonky.
Like, of all the loose ends you're going to tie up, that's the one
that's
you're
going
to take 20 minutes of the film
to explain. It's a cop.
I mean, even if something as simple as, like, he breaks them out instead of them doing it themselves, or they need him to get into the Genesis facility.
Right.
Like, that connects it all, because like it was only by saving this guy that you were able to then save the future.
Absolutely.
Then it all ties together with this. It was sort of just like, we like this actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just, I mean, because what I liked in terms of, you know, using Pops, he took the long way, you know, so essentially here's a cop who took the long way, so to speak, to get here. And, you know, that could have been utilized. Now, obviously, he's not going to have ammunition for everybody, but it's like, you know, again, that knowledge of, wow, within this 30 years, oh, yeah, I know, you know, he can feed them information
that
Pops
something.
Might not even have.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it was just like, he clearly didn't just fall off the deep end. He was still a cop, even if he was an alcoholic detective or whatever.
Right.
He was still, like, prevalent. Like, he still was a normal person. He didn't just lose his mind
and
go.
His faculties and senses and his detective.
So, like,
know-how.
If you've been a detective for 30 years, that this, you saw this. It's not like you heard about this, you can just forget about it. Oh, maybe it didn't happen. No, you were there. You experienced these things. Why couldn't you bring just a little bit more to the table?
In
Help
a sense,
out just a little bit.
You could have made a movie surrounding that cop.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, seriously, because it's like something happened to me and he would have been that cop that, like, oh yeah, that's Looney Bin. He says he was saved by a robot and blah 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 blah. You could have made a movie with that cop as like trying to figure things out and detecting. Could have been a whole other way.
And then eventually it evolves into a buddy picture with J.K. Simmons and Schwarzenegger. And like in the in between years, the two of them, it's Pops and this alcoholic detective.
And my guess is too, I don't know the chronology, but you know, when he did Whiplash, you know, he probably did this role shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, casting was still being announced officially, like, in February 2014.
Yeah.
So
that was when they finally signed on Courtney, I believe, right?
Yeah, so, you know, they didn't... they shot this fairly quick and put it out fairly fast.
Right.
Yeah. Jason Clark, let's talk about him as Junk. I really liked his look.
His look?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His look was great.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm on the whole Jason Clark train. I don't know why. I love Planet of the Apes. I do like the guy, but it was the same thing with, like, it was like a couple years ago. It was like Chris Pratt and Jason Clark were on all these movies, and I didn't know who either of them were yet. You know, like, I'd seen them here and there. I'm on the Chris Pratt train. After watching Jurassic World, like, the dude is an A-list, like,
movie star. Jurassic World, not Guardians for
you? Well, no, absolutely, Guardians. But Jurassic World is, like, that movie, in my opinion, and I don't want to get into it. We covered it on our show. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but he really won me over. Every scene that he was in, it was kind of like, okay, this is, I'm on board here. Jason Clark, I'm still kind of on the fence about, and this movie didn't really help sway me in either direction. I didn't dislike him, but I didn't like him. He was just a filler. And I think he got much better when he became the Terminator. Or became a version of a Terminator, a human, when you know, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, I feel like it could have been anybody.
Well, let me ask you that, because, you know, to tie back to the other movies, and I do want to talk about, by the way, the history of how this movie got made, so we will definitely hit on that. But Christian Bale just wasn't available.
Right.
And so they couldn't get him. Would you guys have wanted to see Christian Bale reprising that role?
Yes. Not because of, like, anything he's done necessarily, like, in Salvation or anything like that, but I just... He has more of a screen presence that I didn't get from Clark in this one.
I thought Clark looked... what I liked about it is he looked sleazy. And so,
to your point,
you know, when he became a Terminator, he looked sleazy, and, like, I didn't buy into him in the sense of trusting him.
But that, like, doesn't... That didn't work for me. Like, I think you're better off with somebody who looks like they're earnest. Like, the way that, like, you can think about, like, Bruce Wayne in the Dark Knight trilogy. Like, you trust that guy. Like, he's got some other stuff going on, and that's exactly what you want. And Bale knows how to play that. But I think, like, what you were saying, Andrew, like, he just... It's not that he did anything bad by any means. He just didn't elevate the role to a point where it really stood out, and I think that Bale could have done that.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't go with Bale.
Yeah, me too.
Because that would have been a throwback to Salvation, which I think they wanted to just, like, you know, I think they just wanted to cut ties with those last two, especially Salvation. And, you know, I don't want to bag terribly on that movie. There are some good set pieces. I think they just bit off a little bit more than they can chew. And I think Christian Bale made a good play as being John Connor. I just think that putting him in this movie would have had too much recall to a sequel that, for the most part, nobody liked.
Yeah.
So, you know, doing that says, oh, it's going to be in continuation of this. I didn't like this movie.
That's fair.
I thought Jason Clarke... I first noticed Jason Clarke in Zero Dark Thirty.
Yep.
I thought he was really solid.
He's
really
great,
liked him in The Planet of the Apes. I thought he was really good. I liked him in this movie. He almost didn't do the movie. He read the script without knowing anything. And he's like, what the fuck is going on
here?
He goes, what did they send me? He goes, I don't want to play the villain. He goes, I'm the villain? He goes, John Connor's not the villain. And so that means, A, he's paying attention. I like that. Mm-hmm. And then, B, after letting it seep in, he's like,
I'll do it.
You know what? Yeah. I'll do it. Because this is a different approach. And why not? And again, if you're going to be in this kind of a movie, you have to be bold. You have to take these leaps. And, you know, and this is why I applaud the cast and everybody involved for at least attempting to try to break away. And, you know, if you're a Terminator fan, you want some more Terminator movies. It's just been a tough franchise. I mean, there's a fan base out there. Yet, like I said, the television series never made it beyond its first season, which is a shame. I don't know if you guys watched it, but check it out. I think it's on Netflix. The Sarah Connor Chronicles. Great little thing after Terminator 2 Judgment Day. The writing started to get so great, and Cersei Lannister, but it didn't last. So the fans never stuck around long enough to push it through. And then Salvation didn't do great, but I think it was because people didn't like the movie. And this one, you know, we'll talk box office a little bit later, but, you know, it's a tough franchise.
Yeah, my main memory of Terminator Salvation is the roller coaster at Six Flags.
That's great. That's exactly what they wanted. Yeah. You know, I would have loved to see Fassbender play the role of Jason Clarke, of John Connor.
Mm.
I think I just love that.
That would have been interesting.
And I think he's more believable. But we don't need to get into that whole recasting thing.
No, that's all right.
Well, certainly one person who wasn't recast, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, you can't.
I think this man was born to play a robot.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if God put what, you know, he's like, you will play a robot in every movie. What? Any movie that you don't play a robot, not going to be as good.
Yeah. If you don't talk, you're a bodybuilder. If you're going to talk, you're going to be a robot in a movie.
Yeah. And that's what Cameron saw in him, too. And you know, he was on Howard Stern recently, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he had this great story about how the I'll be back line. And he kept on fighting with, but he's like, well, what if I say I will be back? And Cameron's like, no, it's I'll be back. And he goes, yeah, but why can't we try it with I will be back? And he's like, no.
He's like, sound good, man.
Yeah, he's like, it's I'll be back. He goes, but we should just try it. I will be back. And then finally, James Cameron goes, what's it say in the script? He goes, it says I'll be back. He goes, that's the way you fucking say it. Right. He goes, no, just do it that way. And because Cameron, in my mind, Cameron has a sense with dialogue, and he purposely picking Schwarzenegger to be in this role. And Schwarzenegger almost turned it down too, because he wanted to be Kyle Reese. And Cameron's like, look, when this movie is done, he goes, this movie is called The Terminator.
Right.
This is your movie. Like, everybody's going to talk about this villain in a way that, like, that's going to be great. You're going to get noticed. Trust me.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. He convinced him to do it. And then since then, he never second guesses Cameron.
Right. No one does.
These guys, like the Spielbergs, the Camerons, the Lucases, the Coppolas of the world, you don't argue.
Yeah.
You just shut up and you do your job. And it's going to be a masterpiece.
Well, but at the time, Cameron wasn't Cameron.
No, he wasn't at all. But he still had that same thing where he was like, we're going to do it my way and it's going to be great because of it.
Yeah.
Which is why he is who he is today.
Yeah. Not the easiest person from what I gather to work with. But it, regardless, even Schwarzenegger was like, he's genius. Like, you know, and then when you think about what Cameron did for Judgment Day, he completely made a different movie. Much like when he took Alien, and when he did Aliens, he made a completely different movie. Yeah. It's still great, fits in the canon, but Cameron has a great way of writing, even though it might sound, you know, cartoonish or over the top. It's done in such a way that the dialogue and how he has his actors perform it, you buy into it. He gives it mm-hmm. a character, even though some people consider him to be sometimes schlocky or overhanded, I think was the word you used. But Schwarzenegger himself has understood what this character has meant. And I think with James Cameron coming on board, I'm not entirely sure if that was like impetus for Schwarzenegger to come back. I didn't find any correlation. But Schwarzenegger came back because he did believe.
He liked the script.
Yeah, exactly. He read the script and he was happy about it.
Yeah.
Plus, how often you get to fight yourself
right
on screen.
Oh, let's talk about the robot fights, the Terminator fights. They were really great in this movie, too, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, the action sequences were good.
Yeah.
The only thing I found myself, like, annoyed by throughout the movie is, and really, I think it just stems back to even, like, back to T2, is if the Skynet brain is creating all of these robots to just like to be effective killing human killing machines at the end of the day, they seem very beholden to a human body's architecture. You shoot them through the heart and they go down. You lop off their head, they go down. Even like when it's a liquid metal guy, they're still coming into a, it's not a blob, it's not like a versatile blob, it's a person, even when it doesn't need to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to talk about that for a second too, because this is where the movie had great exposition that I accepted right off the bat. It's like, well, why do you, you're a machine, you shouldn't age or whatever. And it's like, no, I have real human skin, so that's going to age with time just like everybody else's. And you go, okay, I buy it.
Perfect.
And it's just one line of dialogue, and that was the simplest line of exposition.
Yeah, oh, that was great.
You you buy it. You go, okay.
I found it really great that they went so far to explain the nudity of going back in time.
Yeah.
Right. which I thought was a little bit over the top, but then when Sarah and Kyle are naked together and they're standing, I thought really worked well together. Right. Like, you know, we have to get naked for this, right?
Yeah, I know.
And again, that's something that was explained in the first movie as well. Absolutely. Is like time travel, you can't have this on.
They even explained it in the beginning of this one again, like really briefly.
Yeah, so, you know, again, that's where the exposition, you know, simplicity is the best. And that was like just one line of dialogue that said, oh, he's got human skin. So.
Since 1984, they've just been looking for excuses to get the actors naked. They're like, you have to be naked when you time travel. I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah. Can't send back flowers.
To touch on what you guys are saying about the Terminator fighting, it was great. Like, the special effects were great. And Roper said, of course, the special effects are more impressive than ever, but nearly every curveball offered up in this new parallel universe version of the Terminator world isn't as interesting or as captivating as the original timeline that we loved in the first place. And that's what a lot of people complained about, is that this movie wasn't groundbreaking and revolutionary like the first two. You're not going to get that anymore. Like,
no,
very rarely do you get movies that blow your mind anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I said that during Jurassic World, is that Jurassic World can't recapture, much like this movie, you can't recapture the magic.
No.
Because it's already out of the bottle. Like, we've seen dinosaurs on screen, and the first time that happened, you're like, holy shit, dinosaurs exist. Or the first time in Terminator Judgment Day where you know, and this is where Cameron's groundbreaking, where that checkered floor comes up and you know, and he turns into liquid metal, and that came from the abyss. And, you know, they're always trying to do something different. Well, Cameron's not involved with this movie.
Right.
Now, Alan Taylor, I have to say, I believe Alan Taylor is a talented action director.
Absolutely.
You know, and yes, he did Game of Thrones, some Sopranos. He comes from TV, cable.
Mad Men. So much.
He's done a ton. But, you know, what he's able to do, I think, what his major strength is have multiple pieces of action happening, maybe at different locations, and he's able to piece it together. I was thinking of his big screen debut with Thor, The Dark World, and there's that scene where they're flying through different time. They're flying through different portals, going to different worlds, and there's this big fight going on. As an audience member, you got it. And I was like, and he does the same thing here. He's able to piece together action sequences in a way for audiences to understand what's going on. And I think part of it is he holds on to his shots. It's not really quick cuts. It's not a ton of quick cuts. You actually see the action play out. And I think he's a talented action director. I think he's really solid.
He did that crime comedy movie, Palookaville, in 95. Okay. And then he didn't touch feature film for almost 20 more years until Thor. Mm-hmm. And he must have learned something. Because he wasn't ever a full director on a series. He was always a guest director for numerous episodes. He must have learned how to make his impact be seen with all of these things that are going on in these shows that he just steps in on.
Yeah.
And then you get Thor, and he kind of killed it.
Yeah, he did.
He did great in The Dark World.
Yeah, he did. And he was following Kenneth Branagh. It's like, what are you going to do? And again, he does it in Genesis. And I thought the action sequences were a lot of fun.
Totally.
There were a lot. They weren't like James Cameron choreographs, like, you know, nobody films an action sequence like Cameron in ratcheting up let's call them speed bumps and hurdles for our characters to go through. But at least Taylor knows that, well, I can have something going on over here. I'm going to have something going on over here and here, but I'm going to tie it together and show you so that you know where you are. Mm-hmm. And that is so important in action movies, because how many times have you gotten lost watching an action movie going, what the hell's going on?
Like, who's hitting who?
Yeah, yeah, who's hitting who? And that doesn't happen with him. And I think he's a solid director.
Yeah, and speaking of the Terminators, Legacy Effects, which is the successor to Stan Winston's studio, they created the robotic makeup and everything else. So this is the first Terminator without Stan Winston.
Without any animatronics at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, it's sad. The dude was a legend.
We keep referencing Jurassic World. I mean, he is Jurassic Park.
Yeah, exactly. He was the dinosaurs.
You know, and he was Terminator, obviously. And
I'm going to go back, as I've said this too, you know, the long lost art of model making, you know, which I'm hoping is sort of kind of, it seems to be seeping its way back. You know, people going old style effects. But Stan Winston, when you look at the original Terminator, you know, when the Terminator is coming through the fire, you know that it's stop motion, and it sort of kind of has those old Ray Harryhausen kind of things. But it works in that Terminator, and considering the budget that Cameron had to work with, and using a tangible, like, claw that's coming on the grates, there's something about that Sarah Connor can lift this up, and you know that she's not just pretending to lift something up. You know, he did a great job. But I thought the special effects in this movie worked, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, there's the seamless going in from the opening shots. It was seamless. Seamlessly, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the design on the John Connor Terminator.
Yeah.
Nanobot, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond liquid, it's like individual, like, nanobots, like, combining to form this robot. It makes a lot of sense. It's very modern future, if you will.
Exactly.
I liked it. It was a cool design.
Yeah,
it was the elevation of the Terminator.
Yep. It was like Big Hero 6 gone bad.
Yeah.
I love that scene of him walking away from the MRI machine.
Oh my god,
it was like stop motion bots caught in the air and him walking.
It was great.
That was the moment where I was like, okay, special effects may have taken away because there's no animatronics, but this shit could never happen back then.
Yeah, it was a great shot. It was a great shot. It was a great scene. Fun to watch.
And the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, I thought it was choreographed really well. Yeah. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
There
was super
comedy,
cool.
There was action, and it made sense. And it still brought the world into it. Every time these three are looked upon, they're like, who are you guys? You guys are terrorists or what?
Can I ask something? Because one review that I read, you know, it was another negative review. They asked a question that I didn't really dawn on me until I read it in this thing. And it said, and how many times can we go back to the Golden Gate Bridge to be destroyed and blah, blah, blah. And I started thinking about it going, Well, I can remember as far back as the original Superman was in there. It's been done in the X-Men movies. It's been done in Planet of the Apes, I think, now.
Yeah, I mean, it's some abandoned. Point,
yeah. And it was like, yeah, that Golden Gate Bridge, man, it takes a licking, but it still keeps on taking. It was in San Andreas, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I think they destroy it. I saw the trailer before this movie for the second Maze Runner, and it's wrecked in that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
It's a fun bridge to wreck.
I guess, yeah. It gets blown up more than
the
capital.
I would love to see stats for every time it's featured in a movie, how many people go to see it because they're like, oh, I better go see it now before it gets wrecked.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be gone forever.
Do you think it's tied to the fact, like, it made sense for them to go to San Francisco, especially in this movie, because it's a tech movie. So, of course Genesis is going to launch out of San Francisco. And the bridge, what else you can destroy in San Francisco? Like, Alcatraz? That's not really that cinematic. It'd be fun to blow it up, but
what was fun is
there was a Final Destination movie that took place in the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, but you're right. I mean, it's a very iconic location, and you can logistically put a lot of people in peril because it's to take it to get from point A to B and back.
What I liked, speaking of San Francisco, they shot the headquarters, the Genesis headquarters, that was over at Oracle headquarters in Silicon Valley, which producer David Ellison, his son
his father owns it.
Yes, his father. Larry Ellison.
Hey, Dad.
To shoot a movie.
You know, but we could talk a little bit about the Ellisons, because you have Megan Ellison, who's head of Annapurna. They do a lot of, the Zero Dark Thirties, a lot of more smaller films. David Ellison is the guy, Skydance, and his proclivity is to do, the bigger commercial films. But Megan Ellison had a really big hand in getting Terminator and rights and all that stuff.
She fought for this. Yeah. Crazy.
So
let's talk about that story there's bankruptcy. There's all this in itself could make a great Entourage movie. Rights to Terminator.
Well, that's one thing that I love about this the movies these years, and I guess it's really only this one in Jurassic World because we covered World on our show, and I know you guys did as well. And you probably went in and dove into the production. That movie was in production for 15 years, essentially. You know, with so many owner changes and rewrites and all that. So I'm excited to talk about this one and what all happened here.
Let's do it. Yeah. Well, does anyone in particular want to kick things off?
Well,
my timeline. If I have to start, my timeline starts in 2010. So if anyone's timeline has an alternate timeline or before timeline.
Mine starts with the original Terminator, which was, released by two companies that don't exist anymore.
Yep.
Hemdale and Orion. And the second movie was owned by a completely different entity. And then the third one went, by another one that went bankrupt, and then they sold it to David and Megan, and then they made this fifth movie. But they couldn't get the rights because I believe... it's either Live, which is now Artisan, which is now Lionsgate, still owns the home entertainment rights to the original Terminator. I mean, they keep on re-releasing all this, and I think they might have some sway in Judgment Day as well. But when you're dealing with so many different people and companies that have gone bankrupt or just don't exist, you go into a legal rights issue.
Yeah, I mean,
take it further.
I mean, Hal Sion, they try to auction off the rights for $70 million.
Right.
Now, when you know a company's going down,
right,
there's no way you're going to buy in for something for $70 million. You're going to be like, so Josh Whedon was the only one. He made an offer for
$10,000. That was the only person that offered them money until their hedge fund that was putting him out of business ended up buying it out.
But that was still only 30-ish million.
Yeah, 29.5, but isn't that crazy? Terminator rights? The Terminator.
Right.
And no one wants to give more than $10,000 for
it? It's not that they... I don't think it's that they don't want to. If there was an actual bidding war over this, 100%.
Well,
I think it's more of a fact of, you can get it on the cheap.
Right.
Yeah, so what exactly does that entail? Like, the $29.5 million, is that the rights to distribute the originals? Is it just the rights to produce more
going forward?
To the
name.
To the name.
Everything, yeah.
But it's primarily going on a go-forward basis.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
I understand it.
And here's a convoluted history of rights ownership as well. Studios like MGM Warner Brothers and even Universal having their hands on the property before Paramount and Skydance received their current turn at the bat. You know, it's been, I think Warner Brothers released Salvation, you know, and now Paramount was able to get the rights, and Dave Ellison, Skydance, I think has a deal with Paramount, you know, and then when you're putting together, because I have the anthology as well on Blu-ray, with all the various rights issues, I mean, it was just amazing that that was able to be released and right. come out. So, you know, it's somebody feels the need that they could make another Terminator movie, and I think that was another problem with the television show and there being future television shows is because these rights, you know, and trying to pay off for the rights. And who do you pay? You can't pay Hemdale or Orion anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And someone still wants to collect royalty, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely.
I mean, there was money to be made on this movie. Like,
I'm surprised the Weinsteins didn't come in and say, hey, we own a piece of this.
Right.
We're going to sue.
On the flip side of it, Justin Lin was originally set to direct this, which could have been exciting, but you know, he had Fast and the Furious 6.
And right, him and Chris Morgan, the screenwriter for 6, bailed. That was originally going to be the screenwriter for this movie, and went on to 6. And I think that's for the best, because Fast and Furious 6 was awesome,
mm-hmm.
because Justin Lin directed it, and he brought his own style to it. And I think that this movie can't have that same feel that the Fast and Furious movies has. It needs to take itself just a little bit more seriously. Obviously not a lot more. If you've seen the movie, you know. But just a little bit more than Fast and Furious does.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Justin Lin is directing the next Star Trek. And I don't think he's going to make that look like a... I mean, he could, but I don't think it'll look like a Fast and Furious movie. There might be less lens flare.
Yeah. Saw that he did, right?
Who?
Oh, that's Juan, isn't it?
That's James Juan.
Yeah, it's 7.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, part of the whole, and that's what, which by the way, so Justin Lin, he is quintessentially Universal, and then when you switch to Paramount anyway, so it just kind of all makes sense. I mean, this is the stuff that if you love this type of stuff, go back, read into the archives of the Deadline, Hollywood Reporter, Variety, The Wrap, doesn't matter. I'm sure they cover all of this. It'll make your head spin.
Yeah, and then you get Patrick Lussier and Leda Kalogridis involved. Mm-hmm. And one thing I can talk about Patrick's a fanboy. He loves movies. He's a fanboy almost to the extent, like, if you've ever watched Zack Snyder in an interview, like, you can tell that he's a movie fanboy. And Lussier is the same way. When I was at Lionsgate, we got to release My Bloody Valentine. And Lussier is a big horror fan. An editor. You know, he worked in the Scream movies. Yeah. I believe
he's a big horror movie editor.
Yeah, I believe he may have even edited H2O. I'll have to look at his filmography again.
He wrote Dracula in 2000.
Right, yeah. And he also, you know, he did Drive Angry and such. But one thing I remember, him and his, he has a writing partner. His writing partner did, like, Jason X in Space, Ted Field, I believe, or Todd Farmer. That's his name. Number one, he's a fanboy. So I get why he would love and salivate to do something like this. And he would try to do this with an homage to the original and respect, which I think came through.
Oh, 100%.
And I think that Leda coming on board as well, I think that they work together. It's like I said a little bit earlier, it would have been nice maybe they were so involved and had so much passion. Sometimes when you have so much passion for the project, that sort of kind of can muddy the water. Right. And like, if you step back and maybe if an executive had seen it and says, well, you know, we can tighten this up. Not bring on another writer. You know, it was almost like there was so much love that they tried to throw it all in there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that...
I've said this before. It's almost like when you adapt a book, you got to take the essence of that book and then just write a movie. You can't be like, oh, well, you know, on page 6... This is exactly what happened. We've got to do that. Yeah. No, just take
the
essence.
What they say always, like, hey, Doc, can you tell me what that means in layman's terms, in real English? That's the thing is with these, when you have a movie with all the producers and all the writers being such big fanboys, such, like, just they love the film and they love everything that's come with it, it's hard to explain that in layman's terms.
Yeah.
You know? To dumb it down, if you will.
Yeah, and to me it hurts when, like, your Kyle Reese character, instead of saying, you know, hey, I'm just a silly little human here. Just explain that. Instead, he says, can we shut him off? Because if that character, the character that the audience is supposed to be siding with, if he is annoyed and can't figure it out, and he pretty much says, can we shut him off?
Right.
Then that's going to come out into the audience.
That's part of why, I guess, you know, to that point, as a tangent, that's part of why I also probably didn't like Kyle as much, is because, like, okay, clearly this guy means a lot to Sarah.
Right.
And where she is, you know, we talked about her believability. It's like, okay, why are you being an asshole?
Right.
You're the asshole.
Right. In Terminator 2, Linda Hamilton is scared shitless when she sees the Terminator, and then the kid's like, oh, no, he's cool, Mom. She's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, dude, hop on board. They just saved your life. She's clearly hanging out with him. They killed another Terminator. Just let it go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I agree. Very good. Anything else story-wise or things like that that we want to talk about before we get into the full marketing? We'll break down some numbers and get technical there.
Well, can we talk about that little, like, mid-credits
the post-credit
scene?
Oh, the Genesis Skynet box
thing? Well, where they, like, go underground and then you see, like, hologram Matt Smith, like, standing with, like, a red ball, of like, a red sphere of... What?
Red sphere of hate.
But so that was something that was even below the, like, the field that we were fighting in, right?
Right.
That was an extra, because I was confused for a moment where, because it's the same walls and everything. I'm like, that wasn't there a second ago.
Right.
What do you guys think that was?
Well, I mean, I can only go, I thought it was just like,
there's going to be more of these.
Right. Yeah. My knee-jerk reaction was that there's going to be more to come. Stay tuned. We're going to answer all those questions. And even Alan Taylor says, you know, it was always there as a kind of a gateway to further developments. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say, it's precisely a kind of it's not over yet moment. On the one hand, it's one of the things that points to there being further chapters. On the other hand, this is kind of a franchise where I don't think anybody really believes that you're going to end up neatly or happily. So when our heroes drive off into the sunset, we think, oh, that went well. Mm-hmm. It was, there's still going to be a nagging feeling that, wait, it's not that easy. So, you know, Alan Taylor, I think the writers get that as well. But for the audience, it's, the story's not over yet, folks.
I think two things for me. One is a comment. The second is a question. Number one, I think ultimately, right, this is the trilogy. They just got to end and be like, you know what? We're just going to go in circles. Why don't you shake hands and walk away peacefully?
Just have both of us.
Yeah. Number two, this is, you know, and this could spark a whole... Why were we waiting specifically? Why, you know, we've already had so many different timelines, but then, you know, there's the ticking time bomb of Genesis being launched.
Right.
Why can't we just launch Genesis? It's like, okay, well, clearly, if I'm about to be like, just what are we waiting for? It's not like we're waiting for the last piece of, you know, it's not like construction workers trying to build a railroad where it's like, we need a couple more hours until we're there. It's like, you have the technology, just hit the launch button.
Well, is it because Skynet is still evolving rapidly? Is that why? Because it's like in that last, let's see, I think they get there at like 20-something.
Is the program upload? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, like, what is that? Like,
the data's transferring, right? Didn't they? Because we bring in Dyson again, and this whole operating system, I mean, it's not unlike when Apple...
Right, the cloud.
Right, the
cloud. I was like, it sounds like the cloud.
I had two issues with it, is that, like, this Genesis thing does not sound that revolutionary.
Right.
It's like, my email's on all of my devices. Right. Like,
which I thought that's what they were speaking to, because everyone was like, everyone's always connected to devices. We have one iPad there, we have one phone there, and we have another tablet here.
But, like, if I get, like... This happens like when I'm at
home
now.
What are you talking about?
It's like if I get a call, my phone rings, my iPad rings, and my computer all ring at the same time.
Yeah, your
it's really annoying.
Its horn.
You can't miss that call.
Yeah. But it's already all connected. So, granted, this is
your
only, what, 2 years ahead of it? It's 2017, right?
Yeah.
Two years.
So it's only 2 years ahead, but, like, we've already got it.
Yeah.
It's just iOS, like, 5.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, the only excuse I could give them for, like, not being able to, for it not being able to just be online and be everywhere is, like, if there were calculations that were, like, needed to complete, like, even Skynet would probably need time to program things so that it could take over everything. Maybe that was, like, it's gonna, like, it's the time, it's the render time.
Yeah, we just need that, like,
we need
the upload
buffering
process. Yeah.
The only thing that I can do, it was from a publicity standpoint. Right. It's like, you know, if Microsoft or Apple needs to, you know, it's like, hey, we're going to launch this on this day. Everybody get ready. You know, you don't launch it early and not tell everybody.
Here's the thing. I get that. But especially in those moments when, like, there's a threat of anything and you're 11 minutes away from launching this thing, just be like, hey, happy days. 10 minutes earlier.
And like someone from the future who's like pushing this program, like John Connor knows if this doesn't go online, it's all over now. It's like, why didn't he just be like, oh, like, honestly, I know that we said we're going to do this tomorrow. We should really do this today. Like, just trust me on this one.
But to that point, though, they know that Genesis is going to be Skynet.
Yeah.
Right.
Why did they jump a bunch of years into the future to just before Genesis is going to go live? They don't go to, like, when the idea comes out.
Right, there's 6 months
or
before,
like,
that, or kill the kid. Go back to 84 and kill the kid.
That was always my problem with Back to the Future, because Marty gives himself, like, 10 minutes to save Doc.
Right.
It's like, dude, you gotta, you just said you have a time machine. Go earlier.
You're sitting a couple hours. Who knows?
It would have messed up the time continuum.
No, I don't buy it.
But if they just waited in, like, the 80s, gone the long way, they could have, like, worked to make sure that the Dysons never create Genesis.
Well, but again, we're in a different timeline. Because in T2, the whole thing was that Dyson had the arm in the chip, and they had to destroy that. There was no talk about, like, what they were going to do. Like, that was our focal point. Like, we have to stop that from happening. Now Dyson and company, they're onto a whole different... Like, Kyle Reese didn't know that there was such a thing as Genesis. You know, and to a point, you would have to say, in Judgment Day, Sarah Connor, the only thing we had was that arm and the chip that needed to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So Genesis is something that nobody is aware of or was aware of. This is a whole new thing and a whole new
timeline. He knows. That's why they go to 2017 as opposed to 97.
Well, I thought they went to 2017 because of his flashback memories and what.
Yeah, but it was because Skynet,
like, Genesis.
Is
Skynet.
He knew that. So they knew that Genesis was coming. So if they could have just gone to 97, done her thing, and then if it doesn't work out, they just wait.
Maybe he didn't know who. He might not have known who Dyson was. Oh, like, he might not have known.
Yeah, but you work until you hear that one word in the public eye. Like, as soon as they say the word Genesis, you're like, all right, we've got to go blow that up, make sure it doesn't happen.
I was reading a passage from the Bible, dude. What the hell?
Just killed my brother.
Or just go, like, guys, that's not how you spell Genesis.
Right.
Like, I get you're trying to make it like a pun with system or something.
Exactly.
But everyone thinks you're... look like an idiot.
Very good. I thought that was funny. Speaking of, if we're going to dissect meaningful things, the whole line, the straight line, what was it?
The quickest way to a place is a straight line, or what is it?
What's the line in the movie, right?
Yeah, I can't think what
like
between two points. Yeah, the quickest way to two points is a straight line, or you can fold such lines and go through that way, but I forget what the line in the movie was.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it is.
It was a touching moment that nobody understands or knows what the hell it is.
Oh, you're talking about on the hand.
Yeah. Like, oh, she does it to him on the staircase.
Yes, yeah. He does it to her to prove to her that he is who he says he is, and then she does it on the staircase to Kyle.
To give him the memory.
So that way he can do it to her.
Also confusing, but you still kind of get it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you actually get it.
But I get it, except like especially when you're talking about swimming out of a lake, like a straight line is usually not the best way to get out of like a body of water and onto the shore. It's usually to swim like
with the current,
with the current. Like you follow, like you go along the beach,
right?
Don't swim for the shore; you're gonna drown.
I'm trying to find the quote, but
yeah, I mean.
Thank God we're not. I mean, imagine if Kyle was like, "What was the quote?"
Yeah, wait, who's
something about a line?
Nintendo is Skynet.
They end up blowing up Nintendo headquarters.
Pong.
Follow a straight line and don't look back.
Right. Huh.
That's. I don't know if that we can say that actually happened because.
Right. He ran down a staircase.
Oh yeah. This line is going all over the place. It's like zigzagging between years and crisscrossing itself.
Yeah.
By the way, fans, I'm sure there's 800 things that we didn't talk about that we could spend so many hours on, and you know what? That's what the comments are there for. We do revisit that.
I am curious. I mean, is like people who are watching live, if there are any at this point, have they had any comments about what we've been saying, or maybe they can fill in a gap that we might have missed?
Jonathan, anything of note that you got?
I mean, people have been saying stuff throughout.
well, that's helpful.
Words have been said.
English
words?
J-Hart R.I.C. Says that the increasing humanity of the machines is one of the most interesting things about the Terminator franchise for them.
Interesting.
And we definitely saw that with Pops in this. It's like his attempts, and like eventually he seems to have emotions. Like, he clearly cares about Sarah. You can question this is a big AI debate. Like, is that because of his programming? Like, he can't bring himself to press the trigger and blow her up, even though she wants him to. Right. Is that because his programming says that he cannot harm her, or is that because he cares?
Right.
Or is it both? Is that just...
Well, eventually, yeah. I'm going to start my own franchise called Humanator, and it's where basically you're judged upon whether you're good or you're bad. And it doesn't matter. You're a robot or a human, and you suck at life, you get killed. That's it.
That's the criteria. I'm watching it. I'm in.
There's a lot of people that... Anyway. All right, let's talk about the marketing of this. Because they did... In terms of the trailers, I knew John Connor wasn't going to be good, and it didn't destroy my enjoyment of the movie, but I hate when they do that.
This was one of those things where I'm a huge trailer junkie. I love trailers. I mean, some movies are not as good as their trailers are, and I'm okay with it. But this movie, I was not happy with the marketing.
No.
I did not want to know that John Connor was the bad guy at the end.
I missed that trailer, apparently.
Really?
Like, I had no idea going in.
You see him in too many movies to not miss it.
I agree. I think... straight up, Paramount Marketing screwed the pooch on this.
Yeah, they did.
I think they were in a position where, trailers are somewhat a major part of my life because I worked with them in negotiating, getting them up on screen and things like that, and knowing how marketing departments work and how they cater to trailers. And for some reason, I get the sense that Paramount felt that the movie may not have been the tracking numbers may not have been as strong. And I think he definitely wasn't in that first trailer that came about, that was like in the second or third trailer.
Right.
But that's a major spoiler.
It's
huge. You're giving away your movie like completely. And it's almost as if, well, we need to explain this movie better because audiences who are seeing our materials, they're not getting what's exactly going on. So I think out of like fear in trying to make the movie more understandable, it's like, oh, let's give away this big spoiler. Right. But it was a bad call, Ripley.
It was
a really bad call.
You even see him bad in one of the trailers by what he's saying. And I was sitting there watching the movie, and he comes out in the hospital, and it's supposed to be this moment of like, oh my God, they're reunited, like the whole family.
Right.
It's the first time you've ever seen all of them together, and they're all so happy. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, I saw the trailer. This is bullshit.
Right.
I know something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And that kind of ruined it for me.
I mean, I was hoping... because
a phone call?
Skype.
I was wondering, one of the things, Jonathan, if you want to take a couple of calls, maybe we can do that as well. But for me, one of the things that I was, you know, in that moment, I was like, are they going to flip this on its head? Because there's that famous line of like, you taught me to survive. And in the trailer, that's a big line. You know, you've always taught, and that's why he is who he is. That's a
good point.
And I thought, oh, wow. In the context of the trailer, that was not the way, obviously, this movie is doing it. And so it's like, well, maybe he's not evil.
Yeah.
Maybe he did survive. I don't know.
Don't know. And Patrick and Leto, they were asked this question a lot. They go, how did you feel about the trailer? Now, as people who are in this business, they want to continue to work. So they really walked on eggshells. But you
can
tell that they were really not happy with how the marketing took this feature and gave away a lot of the plot points. And this movie hinges on... that John Connor thing. And again, if you sort of kind of know that going in, at the beginning... you're like, well, I know, like, when you see John Connor at the beginning, like, saving Kyle Reese, you sort of kind of know, well, something's going to go wrong because he's the bad guy now, and how do they do that? I just think it was a bad call. I actually think it's a reason, too, that may have hurt it going into box office. I think that they made it too convoluted to begin with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. You don't have to give everything away in the trailer. Just let us show some kick-ass, you know, Terminator fight scenes, some helicopter scenes, some great pieces of dialogue, Arnold saying, I'll be back.
Exactly.
Done! You're Leave out! Alone. You're it! Because you're going to bring in those fans.
Only thing I think, and I say this as, like, the one person who didn't manage somehow to have that.
That's impressive.
Really. I just blocked it out and, like, wasn't paying attention.
You were getting your popcorn.
Yeah, maybe. But my only thought, like, the reason that they could have done it is because that was, going in not knowing it, really what made this movie sing to me is that twist and that it, like, it was different. Like, this was suddenly not just, okay, we're doing another Terminator sequel. This is, like, a new story. This was unexpected. And, like, that's the big thing that I miss in a lot of movies these days. Yeah. Like, especially as I've seen more and more movies as the years go on, like, movies become so predictable that it gets dull. You want to be surprised, and this was surprising to me.
Yeah,
so, of course, it's a shame. I wonder if it's just that they were trying to sell that idea of this isn't the same movie, because maybe they were getting that response. It's like, why am I going to see another Terminator? I'll just go back and watch T2.
Right, but I'm so jealous of your experience now. Like, you think of that in the theater, you're watching it, Arnold comes out and shoots him, and you don't know what's going on, and then Arnold grabs her by the neck, you're like, oh my god, is this happening? Is he really, like, bad, and he was sent back all the way back to the 70s to be her guardian so that he could eventually kill John Connor? And if you've already seen the trailers, you're already like, no, he's actually a Terminator. Yeah. It's going to happen.
I still kind of was like, oh, John Connor's probably bad now. Because they just went through the whole motion of you never know who you can trust. And, like, so, like, that sort of, like, keyed me in. But it was still a surprise.
Yeah, and he
moment.
Also had that line of, like, you know, infiltration takes years. And so that's like, okay.
So somebody was going to be a robot.
Yeah, and
but at least you're in that moment. You don't have 30 minutes of thinking about it. You know, because, I mean, realistically, if you've caught up at that point, you're only a minute later going to see him turn. So it's not the biggest, like, oh my god, I knew
That's
40 minutes ahead of time that this was going
to
happen.
And to your point, too, I guess, you know, when I went in to go see the movie, knowing what I knew from the trailers, I was sort of kind of hoping, I was being optimistic, going, well, they threw that into the trailer for a reason. Maybe they're going to twist it again and something else is going to happen. Or maybe that's just one small thing of the movie, but then that didn't end up happening. And again, I don't know. I think it was an act of desperation on marketing.
Yeah.
That's usually what happens. When you start to give away too much of your movie, it's somebody telling you your marketing's not working. You've got to do something to get the audiences in there, because what you're doing now isn't working. And it seemed to me like an act of desperation to put so many twists into that, but it ruins the movie going experience. You know, fortunately, we were able to walk out, and I'm sorry to, I don't mean to speak for the crowd, but from our conversation, I get garnered that we enjoyed this movie to a certain extent. And so I still walked away going, yeah, that was a fun movie, but to your point, I would have liked to have had your experience, because then I could have walked out and go, wow, that was really bold.
Right. Yeah, like, wow. I was just, while we're talking about John, there was another point, like, maybe it's influenced by this, but because I had no, like, previous thoughts about his character, I actually started thinking about if the movie was going to take a turn of Skynet being not totally evil. And it sort of stemmed just from that, the one line where he says, just like humanity, always trying to kill whatever they don't understand, and that, because this is the first within Terminator, this is the first true human Skynet hybrid, and what if that is like the where it becomes some a new third new thing that yeah. It's new. It's but and then he's like, well, if you don't agree, I'm gonna kill you. Right. Okay, like, no, he's still evil. But like I like, and that was I almost wish they had gone the other direction where he's only trying to defend himself and what this new
and what Skynet represents.
Yeah, this new being.
We're
if
not
you
what
will.
You know. Yeah, it would have been another bold. It would have been another.
As long,
string
as, long as it didn't go into, I'm just glad it didn't go into Age of Ultron territory with the like, hey, in order to save humanity, humanity cannot exist because they're evil. You know what I mean? Like right. just that sort of logic. It's like, ah, really? Come on. So I'm happy for that. But yeah, I agree. I mean, it, you know, part of it was the, a couple things with it. I mean, you know, you look at it like something like this. I really like when marketing can get really creative. Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about just getting the rights to this movie. If you can't own all of the rights to all these franchise, you know, all the Terminators, it can be really tough to put together a really fun package to get people right. excited. So right. if you can't do Absolutely. That, what are you left with? Okay, trailers. And you know, from this was, I gotta say, I mean, movies are made faster and faster. But no matter how fast you can edit a movie, no matter how fast you can shoot a movie, you still need time for the creative process. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's no machine out there that can calculate what's going to work in that end and right. what's not. And I think certainly the marketing suffered from that.
Well, but there is. There is something that can help predict. It's called tracking. I mean, as soon as a trailer hits, depending on how many weeks out, there are certain... There are certain companies out there, albeit they're not quite good at their jobs, especially this summer, but there is tracking. There is information that they get out.
Well, no one predicted Jurassic... I mean, part of it is, I think there's the marketing, but then who the hell would have predicted that Jurassic World? No one's got it going, you know, 5 weeks.
There's a major flaw in the system. There really is. But you have to understand, too, that when you're putting a marketing campaign together, they test it. It goes out there. They put the, you know, when a first trailer goes out, okay, when a studio launches their first teaser trailer or whatnot, they actually do send, there are checking services that go out to theaters and they check to not only see that the trailer is playing on screen and audit that, but they also are gauging audience reaction. So all this information the studio has as to whether people remembered the trailer, what they remembered about the trailer, and it goes back to the studio and they have a working list. Like they know where the trailer's playing on screen, what theater, they have an audience makeup of who's at that theater, and this is all taken down into consideration. And then it said, did people like the trailer? Were they confused by the trailer? Did they not like the trailer? They have this information going in. So if it's not grabbing an audience, then they can retool and make another trailer that'll work better. I mean, how many times can you recall in watching trailers where you've seen one trailer, then the second trailer is different?
Like right,
they've taken,
usually.
You know, a different tact, and that's to try to get audience reaction. Again, and so I think that's exactly what happened here. People maybe, I don't know, they weren't liking what they were seeing, and they retooled, and there was now we're coming closer to release date, and we've got to do something. So I think it was an act of desperation.
I mean, it's interesting that it is in that way. I mean, for me, I just, it's naivete where I'm just like, you know, trailer one shows me different stuff.
Right.
Trailer two, I want to see different stuff that gets me excited. So it's not like, oh, they repackaged, you know, if trailer one's working, I still want to see a repackaging of trailer two.
I don't just want to see a slightly longer version of trailer one.
A slightly longer version, but if you'll note, there are scenes that were still in trailer one because they know that those scenes work.
They were bankable, yeah.
And if they're getting more and more eyeballs, you know, now with the internet, you know, that's another big deal too. You know, trailers debut online, and that you get, you don't need to send auditors out to a theater. You get instant feedback immediately when you put a trailer online. You have to sift through who the haters are, but you get pretty much like the moment that trailer hits whatever website, people are writing going, that sucked, or ooh, that was great. And you know, there's a whole machine.
I mean, I feel like, again, the audience for Terminator is a dying breed. Clearly, if you look at the box office opening for this movie, but I think that's still a testament to the marketing. I don't think they did a good job marketing this movie. I don't think the trailers were cut well together. And I mean, it was cool to see Arnold dressed up on Hollywood Boulevard going around and promoting the movie as the Terminator.
Yeah, that's funny.
But at the end of the day, this movie grossed less in its opening weekend than any of the other Terminator movies, except for the very first one.
Yeah, and
which is shocking to me.
And let's talk. We can talk a little bit about the numbers, but you also have to throw into the fact that you had two other movies again. We're tracking just. Screwed the pooch. Like, they just got it wrong. You still had Jurassic World out in the marketplace.
Inside Out.
And you had Inside Out.
Yep.
And now you're throwing in another action movie. Nobody anticipated that Jurassic World was going to have the holding power that it did in its, third week, I believe. You're going into the 4th of July movie, into the 4th of July weekend, which this year, the 4th of July was on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. People don't go to the movies generally unless it's raining. Like, I remember being in Boston, and if it was raining on the 4th of July, then I would go to the movies. If not, I was on the beach, I was barbecuing, I was somewhere watching fireworks. So you already have that one day where, weather permitting, your grosses are going to drop down, okay? But we did have, you had the Friday before, Terminator was released. Well, Wednesday. I saw it on a Wednesday night. For the 7 o'clock show, but officially it opened up on that Thursday. So you had that whole weekend going in.
That first 24 hours, it actually did pretty well, though.
Yeah, it did all right. And you're getting the fans to come in, but then everybody's off on their vacation. A lot of vacationing families going on. You still had two juggernauts at the box office that it had to compete with. You know, and then domestically, its 3-day was like $27 million.
Right.
And then, but to date, its total gross is about $52 million plus. Mm-hmm. You got to look at the worldwide box office, which right now is about $140 million. Okay, so that says a couple of things. The overseas audience is actually, maybe they're enjoying it, but they like to see Arnold Schwarzenegger in this kind of a role. So we can talk about whether we think there'll be a sequel or not.
I think they did. Unless
greenlit, too, yeah.
To my knowledge, unless I'm getting, the three of us have read that they've greenlit 2 and 3.
No, I've read the same thing.
They did, from everything that seems to be out there, they did greenlight them. That by no means means that we're going to get them. Right. They could easily look at these numbers and be like, yeah, no.
And it's funny because Arnold Schwarzenegger and Howard Stern, because Howard said, well, this is great for you because, I understand you already have two other movies. And it's like, Howard, he goes, listen, he goes, let's just see how this movie does before we start. I focus on this movie before I start thinking about the other ones. In all honesty, though, if there is a sequel, it won't be because of domestic. Paramount will make the decision and say, we're going to make this movie for the foreign release. It's much like I've told this story before. Fox had, it's the young adult novel, Percy Jackson. Mm-hmm. The Percy Jackson movies, okay? They released the first Percy Jackson movie. The movie didn't make any great waves at this domestically, but overseas it was huge. So when they went and greenlit the sequel, they didn't do it for the domestic numbers. They did it to appease the foreign audience and the foreign markets because they were clamoring for a sequel. So they went ahead and made a movie for that. The same thing could happen for Terminator, but it won't be predicated on our numbers. Sadly.
I want to say we got 105 minutes into this podcast without an Arnold impersonation.
There's a slight one earlier. There's a little one.
I just did it. I just did one. Oh, Howard.
No, that's what I'm saying. 105 minutes in.
I thought I did one at the beginning. I thought.
It was just that bad. No, I'm sorry.
All right, guys. We got to start wrapping up.
Rich Little.
But let's do last thoughts. Let's start with the new guys again. Let's start with Zach Wilson.
Same thing. Like, even after the discussion, at the end of the day, this was a fun movie. It was a dumb, fun action movie with a lot of nostalgia built in a summer of just like a lot of nostalgia. I enjoyed it, but I'm probably not. I have no desire to like see it again anytime soon. I might have a desire to see Terminator 2 again. That's about it.
Oh, that's great.
Andrew?
I think people are too hard on this movie. I think this is actually a pretty, pretty well-made movie with great callbacks and a good feeling of nostalgia from the first two. I will watch it again, not in theaters. And I actually am kind of looking forward to the next one. I was not looking forward to seeing this movie. I was excited that I had a reason to see it, to come on the show. And after walking out of the theater, I was like, you know what? That movie wasn't half bad. I really actually enjoyed myself. So... I know that I'm in the minority here, but I really like this movie. I'd put it third in line in the series.
Very good. And then, by the way, definitely check out these guys on Action Movie Anatomy, and you know where they did talk about Terminator 2. So if you want more Terminator stuff, definitely check that out. If you love action movies, check it out.
Check it out. We're there.
Yeah. I like this movie. I enjoyed this movie. But there were a couple of things. Acceptance, number one. You have to accept that this is what they're doing now. And, you can't be predicated on the fact that Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor don't immediately fall in love and have a kid and all this. You have to accept that. The other thing, though, too, is, you talk about the nostalgia factor. Listen, for all those people who loved Jurassic World, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that movie had a lot of sci-fi schlock to mm-hmm. it. Raptor training, dinosaurs for the military. That's just dopey stuff. And if you're going to go along with that and say that that's like the best sequel in the franchise, I mean, you shouldn't be so harsh on Terminator Genesis, because right. that is pure schlock. This one doesn't necessarily have schlock. It's just... It just makes your hair hurt. You have to really think a lot about this. And I wish that they I wish the exposition was simplified more.
Yes.
And I wish they didn't make it so complicated, which mm-hmm. I thought was a really big thing with Jurassic World. They made it way too complicated. And this one, they made it really complicated. Had they just whittled it down, they might have had a really solid, like a movie that I would have said, that's a great movie. But I still had fun, and I'll get it on Blu-ray.
How about you, Phil?
If nothing else, this got me involved in all the Terminator films. So I'm glad, for the longest time I didn't understand what the fascination with Terminator right. was. You know, the people who were on board were, Terminator. I was like, okay, I don't get it. But it did make me get into it, and so I'm glad it did. And they are, the first one's great, the second one's great. I have yet to see four and five, but I love this one.
Right.
And it's a good time at the movies. It just is. Yeah. And if not, just go out to the movies. Support your movie theater.
And I didn't mean it. Right. I'm with you. I did not dislike this movie as much as I could have. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that some of the reviews, it's definitely not as bad as a lot of the reviews would lead you to believe.
Oh, it's not a bad movie. It's right. just not a great one.
Right.
Yeah. If you know what you're going to get going right. in, you're going to have a fun time.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know about it.
So there you go. Thank you guys for joining us on Anatomy of Movie once again. We'll be doing Magic Mike XXL. Is that
Double XL.
Double XL. Right after this. Not with us.
Yeah.
Not
with us. A little
different.
Yeah.
Different.
We'll have females for that one. So stay tuned for that. We've got Ant-Man down the pipeline. We've got
Mission Impossible.
American Ultra. Oh my God. And that's just still the summer. There's so much to discuss. Right. In the meantime, where can the people follow you, Zach Wilson?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @ThatZachWilson, @ThatZachWilson, and also over on AfterBuzz. This summer I'm going to be covering The Strain, Dominion, and Killjoys on Sci-Fi.
Great. There you go.
You can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter. That's GHAI. And like you said, please check out our show, Action Movie Anatomy, Wednesdays at 12:30.
And you can find me on Twitter at DMovies1701. So that's DMovies1701. Tweet, follow, say hey. Look forward to reading everybody's comments. And you can find me here at the Popcorn Talk Network, always doing Anatomy of a Movie.
He'll be back.
He'll be back.
Thank you guys for joining us. Definitely comment if this is your first time ever. Please subscribe. We've got a whole roster of shows for you to go back in on. If you're a fan, we've got obviously new ones coming down the pipeline. And we spoke a lot about Andrew's show, Action Movie Anatomy. Check that out. But then there's 15 other shows that you can check out here at Popcorn Talk that are equally great, and we love supporting every single one of them. So there's no shortage of good content. We'll see you here next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.